wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Hello, we're welcome to Dear Science. We're joined in studio here by our expert, Professor Alan Blackman. Gosh, how are you
that
today?
Word. It's beautiful day today. It's lovely out there.
It's very nice. It hasn't been it wasn't as cold this morning as it was earlier this week.
I know, yeah, it was
actually
quite warm.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
No, getting the sun, it's lovely. Very nice. Very, very Dunedin-esque day today, if I may say so.
I thought Dunedin was a lot colder than this. You never get a day like this in Dunedin.
Hey!
Not that I'm...
Yeah, there we go.
Come on. We've got some interesting topics on the agenda today. Our first one is about a novel way to administer vaccines. I read this piece. It's about the teeth of mice, flossing teeth. Did you want to tell us about this one, Alan?
Well, given what's going on in the world at the moment with that, academic, guy RFK Jr., who's busy. I think he just took away $500 million worth of funding for mRNA vaccines, I think. Mm-hmm. It's probably quite timely to talk about vaccines. And the worst part about vaccination, as I'm sure you all remember from when you were kids, is having to go to the doctor and getting that bloody needle in your leg or in your arm or wherever it was,
And they always say it won't hurt.
They always lied, didn't they? Yeah. And the question then becomes, is there a better way of doing this sort of stuff? Now, they've used things like compressed air in the past where, they just sort of hold that thing against your skin and, compressed air and it shoots it through the skin and everything. But... is there a better and a more efficient way, let's say a more targeted way of doing things? So some workers in the USA were asking this question. And in particular, if you are going to get vaccinated, somebody else has got to do it for you, don't they, at the moment? Is there a way that where you could potentially do it yourselves? And so this led them to think about the ways in which viruses often enter the body. So how do they get in? Generally through the mouth or the nose. And so therefore what it would be good to do is to have vaccines that can sort of target these areas specifically. So, the mouth, the nose. So you've got vaccines that target the tissues in these regions. And that's all very well to say, but difficult to do because the cells in these regions, we've got sort of mucous membranes and stuff like that, the cells are very, very, very tightly packed together, and it's very hard to get anything to infiltrate those particular areas. Okay, mm-hmm. So ideally, that's where you'd want to put your vaccines, but difficult to do. But somebody had the bright idea... that there is a spot that they hadn't thought of, and that is the point where the gums meet the teeth. Okay. And this is a thing called the junctional epithelium, which I did not know before today. And so the cells there are less tightly packed, and you've got a better chance of being able to get stuff into where it's meant to be if you can particularly sort of target that region.
But so that's something you can reach by flossing, I suppose.
Absolutely it is. Mm-hmm. But sort of up until now, you've got an injection, which is just sort of, an injection of a liquid. Sometimes they're thinking about sort of putting things under your tongue and stuff like that. So that's a drop of whatever. But sort of getting that onto your gums, how do you do that? And you're absolutely right. Somebody had the bright idea. Dental floss, sheesh, we already do it. And so armed with this idea, they thought, okay, let's, of course, as we do, try it on mice, because we try everything on mice first. And so what they needed to do was to floss a mouse, basically. And that apparently was harder than they thought, okay?
It would be.
So all that they need to do is to impregnate dental floss with your vaccine and then simply floss, floss the mouse. And after a few unsuccessful attempts, they realised that they're going to have to sort of anaesthetise the mouse to be able to do this. And getting that piece of floss between those teeth, you know, getting it to hold in there was quite difficult. But after lots and lots of trials with the anaesthetized mouse, they managed to be able to sort of get it in there effectively. Mm-hmm. And once the mouse woke up, ta-da, they found that it had worked. So that doing this had actually sparked an immune response.
That's and really cool.
They used a dental floss coated with four different types of influenza vaccine. Uh-huh. And they found that, yes, indeed, that the mouse was sort of resistant to infection by the flu.
Do you think, do you think the anti-vaxxers would like the sound of that? Would they like
The anti-vaxxers wouldn't like the sound of anything.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I'm an anti-flosser.
I don't think this is going to change RFK's mind somehow. So that's a great way of doing it through the mouth. Now, the other thing was the nose. Now, ideally, you'd really want to put it in through the nose because it's even better there. But the trouble is with the nose that's got a direct link to the brain. Oh. So there are potential dangers with doing things up the nose. So this sort of looks like the best option. And so having sort of done the whole proof of concept with the mice, as you do, they're now going on to human trials, and the first thing that they need to do is to sort of gauge the effectiveness of the transfer of stuff from the floss onto the gums. And so excuse me, they use a fluorescent dye, so they're coating the floss with a fluorescent dye. They get people to floss, and then they measure the amount of dye that's left on that area between the gum and the teeth. And they reckon that they get about 60% transfer, which seems to be, they seem to be pretty happy with that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as so often on Dear Science, it's a watch the space sort of thing. More work is necessary. And, you know, this sounds like a potentially really, really good way of actually being able to self-administer. You know, because, you know, and most people floss, so...
It's quite good because I guess there's something for everyone. Do you want to inject it, floss it, or shoot it through the nose? Inject it, floss it, snort it. You've got three choices.
And you're running out of excuses as to why you don't
want to. Exactly. It's like, oh, I don't like needles. Oh,
Yeah, well, you're alive. Yeah.
Well, do you like flossing? Well, I mean, I'm very bad at flossing my teeth, so...
Yeah, this is a great reminder to get into the habit of flossing again.
Absolutely.
For sure. I'll check on to our next topic. Speaking of brains before, we were talking, you've showed us an article about how there is subtle light in our brains. Now, you can't see it with the eye, but it is able to be detected, I suppose. Did you want to talk about how you can see that?
This is really weird, and this came up earlier this year, in fact. This is something that people have sort of known about for quite some time, or at least it's been proposed for quite some time, but it was really only proven sort of earlier this year, where some people did some very, very, very sensitive experiments and showed that, yes, we do emit light. All of us emit light, except it's really, 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 really faint, like ridiculously faint.
Mm-hmm.
But the really interesting thing is that it's your living tissues that give off life, and when you're not alive anymore, you don't give out light.
Oh, that's cool. I understand that it's connected to different activities. What kind of activities make your brain glow a bit more?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think that anybody's really sure about where the light's actually coming from, what the actual source of the light is. But certainly it's something, it's all combined with energy, as light always is. So, and it's a thing called ultra-weak photon emission. This is what this process is called. So light is just a series of little particles that we call photons, okay? Mm-hmm. Ultra-weak, meaning we're not emitting many photons at all. So, and so now it's been shown that, yes, we do glow, but in fact the brain glows more than the rest of the body because the brain uses around about 20% of the energy of the body. So that's your high functioning part of your body, your most high functioning part of the body. And so a bunch of workers in Canada thought, if we glow, then because the brain uses more energy than the rest of the body, surely that should glow more. So let's do some experiments, see if we can see this. And if it does, then let's see if it's correlated to any particular sort of brain activities and stuff like that. And so they got 20-odd volunteers to sit in a very, 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 very dark room. Mm-hmm. So because this, again, is an extraordinarily sensitive technique. And I'm going to say, having looked at the paper, I still don't know how the heck they do it. Mm-hmm. But they've got some sort of detector that they just sort of put around your head, and somehow this can detect photons from inside your head. Now, that's, to me, a bit weird. I don't know how it gets from the inside to the outside,
but
apparently it does. So they hooked up these people with these very, very sensitive light detectors and also electrical signals as well. Okay, so they're trying to correlate the light with the electrical signals and see what's what, basically. And so they told the volunteers to do simple tasks like, you know, opening and closing your eyes or listening to sounds or stuff like that, okay? And mm-hmm. then they're looking at the brain activity and they're looking at the light emitted by the brain and seeing if there's any sort of relationship. And what they saw was, yes, it does appear to be some sort of correlation between the light being emitted and the activity of the brain. And the light seemed to be emitted in particular sort of patterns, so sort of slow rhythmic patterns, which, you know, by the sound of it, they've yet to make sense of. You know, this is an ongoing thing. More work is necessary, as, you know, as is always the case. But it sort of raises a very interesting idea of this being perhaps a non-invasive way of looking inside the brain, or looking at the brain, indeed. If we're, you know, normally what we're doing is shooting particles into the brain, this is the opposite of that. So we're looking at emission from the brain. We don't have to excite it with particles or anything like that. It's just a natural process. And if we can figure out how this natural process correlates with the brain activity, you know, it's going to be quite a big thing, I'd say. Yeah. So, you know, this is all very cool stuff.
Yeah, very, very, very nice.
And difficult to do, I would have said. Difficult mm-hmm. to do, but, you know, that's science. Hell, if it was easy, everyone would have done it. So
yeah. It'll be interesting to see what they figure out in terms of how the brain glows, I suppose.
Yes, yep. And, you know, again, this may be a story we come back to in, you know, a year, two, three times, whatever, you know.
Yeah,
and,
I'm sure.
And see how they're going, yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Our nice. Final topic, it's a special day, a special occasion today. It's Schrödinger's birthday.
It is indeed.
He would have been 138, as I worked out from the Wikipedia page this morning.
No, you're absolutely right.
Did you want to talk about Schrödinger?
Is that with the cat?
Yes.
Schrödinger's cat.
Are you aware of Schrödinger's cat?
I know of, I
may or
saying.
May not be allowed.
I may or may not know of it.
Very
clever. Someone had to make it.
Oh, that's very good.
Somebody had to do it.
I like it. So, yeah, today is the birthday of Erwin Schrödinger. He was Austrian. He was born in 1887.
Yeah.
Died in 1961. And he's pretty famous in the scientific world. And, again, so you brought up one of the things that he's famous for, Schrödinger's cat. And the other thing that he's famous for is the Schrödinger wave equation.
Ooh, what's this?
Whoa.
Well,
it just so happens that this year is the 100th anniversary of essentially the invention of quantum mechanics, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a paper published by a guy by the name of Heisenberg, whose name you may have heard of as well, particularly if you've watched Breaking Bad. But
No, not for me.
I have not.
Come on.
I'm
going
to get outed on the radio.
You're hosting Dear Science and you haven't watched Breaking Bad. Wow.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
I've seen The Big Bang Theory. That's my scientific TV show name. Come on.
Yes. So, So Heisenberg published a paper in 1925, and that sort of started this whole quantum mechanics thing. And quantum mechanics basically revolutionized science. And it sort of said that not everything that had come before was wrong, but when we look at matter on the very, 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 very small scale, then it just gets a bit weird. And it gets weird in totally unintuitive ways that we can't still comprehend, mm-hmm. basically. And he was the first one to publish about this. And then Schrödinger came along, similar idea, but he sort of gets all the credit because he came up with this equation. And this equation, the Schrödinger wave equation, if you can solve that Schrödinger wave equation, then you can know everything about everything, basically. It's the holy grail.
It's a big claim.
Okay. And the problem is that we can solve the Schrödinger wave equation, but we can only do it for hydrogen. That's it. Hydrogen atom.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the other elements on the periodic table, and the other 117 of those, we can't solve the Schrödinger equation for exactly. We have to resort to approximations. And we can do pretty good approximations, but It'd be nice to be able to solve it exactly. And as I said, if we could, then we'd know everything about everything.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a pretty big thing, which is why he got the Nobel Prize in 1933
in physics. I guess
going
from half knowing maybe, maybe not, to everything about everything is quite a jump. It's quite an improvement, yeah. I guess.
And then you brought up this thing about Schrödinger's cat.
Mm-hmm. It's the famous one.
It is the famous one. And so basically what Schrödinger's cat is all about is that we take this cat, we put it in a box with a lid on it, and inside the box is some sort of radioactive sample that may or may not decay.
Mm-hmm.
And if it decays, it then causes a vial of poison to open in the box and the cat will die.
Yeah. Okay?
Sorry, cat lovers out there. Right. And so Schrödinger's sort of explanation of this was that when the lid on the box is closed, we don't know whether the cat is alive or dead because the radioactive decay is a totally random process. Okay, we don't know when that's going to happen. It may have already happened, it may not have yet happened. Okay.
Yeah.
And so basically his interpretation of this was, well, the cat can only be alive or dead. Okay, those are the two things that it can be.
Mm-hmm.
When we open the box, we know whether the cat's alive or dead. Okay, but when the box remains unopened, in other words, when we don't observe the cat, we don't know whether it's alive or dead. And so basically Schrödinger said, well, it's both at the same time.
Yeah, it's a bit of a paradox.
It's a superposition of states, of one being alive and one being dead. And it's the act of opening the box that causes the whole system to then choose whether the cat's alive or dead or not. And this was he sort of proposed this as being sort of a joke for the interpretation of quantum mechanics, because he didn't like the way that quantum mechanics was being interpreted. He thought it was a bit silly, and so he sort of put this forward as a joke. But then it got sort of taken seriously, and it is a very good explanation of this whole superposition principle that occurs in quantum mechanics. So that's why people will have heard of Schrödinger's cat, I think, a very, very famous example in quantum mechanics. And, as I said, the centenary of quantum mechanics this year, which hasn't been made a big deal of, unfortunately. I think it should.
Oh, that is a shame.
Yeah, it's needed more media exposure. So we might come back to that maybe later on
certainly.
In the year, I think. Yeah. So there you go. Happy birthday. Yeah.
Shout out to Schrödinger.
Yes.
And his cat, who is probably dead now. great. Thank you. That is all of our topics for today. So we've come to the end of the Dear Science segment. Thank you to Alan for joining us today. Thank you, Motet.
Yeah.
And as always, thank you, Science.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to Motet, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.